and welcome to minute 43 of season 3 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick, Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Travis Bowe of the Watchmen Minute. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Hello there.
Hello there. You sounded like Obi-Wan Kenobi with that.
That was the hope.
Yeah. I know. Let's hope Alex and Pete, don't get upset about that. Come on.
Send me a cease and desist.
Wait, from them or from Lucas or Disney? Who knows?
Right.
Now you don't want any cease and desist anyway. Doesn't matter from who. All right. So minute 43 begins with McClane ducking very quickly and ends with Holly looking on knowingly. So yesterday we ended the minute with John taking a ride on the top of an elevator. And this minute opens up with him looking up and realizing that, I should have been paying more attention. And he has to quickly duck down so that his head doesn't smash up against one of the metal beams. I think that would have, that would have made this a 43-minute movie had that happened. Or 42 and change. How's that?
Yeah.
I don't think we would have even made it to 43.
I don't know if this elevator peril is necessary. It's not a direct threat from the bad guys. It's just an indirect threat of being in the inner workings of this building. So I don't know that it's necessary.
It just feels tacked on. Yeah, I agree with you. It wasn't necessary at all. It would have worked if later on, at some point in the movie, someone else would have been on the elevator and then they would have gotten their head smashed. And then it would be like, okay, now we know why. It's Chekhov's elevator shaft. I don't know.
Yeah.
Chekhov's elevator bar. But it isn't. That's the thing. It doesn't. Right. It doesn't add to. Or maybe the idea here is to make us think that later on this is going to happen. It's a faw Chekhov elevator beam. Who knows? Let's see how we can fake them out.
Yeah.
Who knows? And it works. I think it's also trying to show the amount of stress that John is under, that he's not really paying attention to everything that's going on, even though he's paying attention to a lot of things. I think that's what it partially has to do with it. But also, what's really funny, as the elevator stops, if you pay attention, you see that he, shakes his head.
Yeah, yeah, I do like that.
Like in a cartoonish way. Mm. Something that Bugs Bunny would do or something like that. wow, that was close. That type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we see him, start maneuvering himself out of all of these metal beams.
Yeah. I like that there's a bit of this in this minute, especially, that shows him in the inner workings of this building, that, this isn't an area that's just under construction. Like, this is literally a part of the building that not many people would get to see. It's little catwalks and ladders and tiny door access hatches and things like that that wouldn't be very common for people to see. I like him sneaking around in this area.
Yeah, especially, it goes back to what we were saying before about the whole idea of Chekhov's. This is in order for us to understand later when he goes through these things. Mm-hmm. So we get an idea of where he is. So first they're mapping it out for us. But it is an area that's still under construction, because when he comes out of the shaft itself, you can see behind him a wall that is definitely sheetrock, because it still has plaster on the side and a whole bunch of spots around it and stuff like that. So it's still under construction, even though it's pretty close to being completed. Let's put it that way.
Right.
It's not really on there. And then
not as integral to finish this before something else. Yeah.
Apparently. Right. And then he goes around this obstacle course and opens an access hatch. And what's really funny is he just crouches down and easily jumps through it.
Yeah.
You know, like, with no effort whatsoever.
Little bunny hop, yeah.
Yeah, which is really funny because it's like, you know, as you said, it's a shortened access hatch. It's like, you know, I guess half the size of a man. You know, yeah. if he's standing up, I think it starts at his waist, that type of thing. But for him to jump through it the way he does is pretty interesting, and it's pretty effective. You know, and as he's running down this corridor, so we see a bunch of things on the side of the wall. It's on the right hand side. It's on his right hand side, but it's on our left hand side because he's running towards us. So we first of all see a lot of like electrical panels. They look like fuse boxes or something like that. There's actually like two of them or three of them, something like that.
Yeah.
Plus, there are three clipboards that are hanging from a from some sort of cork board, what it looks like, or cardboard, something like that. And then there's like this picture that looks like has a Chinese figure on it or something like that. It looks to me very familiar, but I couldn't really place it. You know, the shot isn't that great to get a complete idea as to what that is, though. But what jumped out at me are the clipboards. You know, I never noticed them before.
Okay.
Have you ever used a clipboard? Do you use one?
Not in my day-to-day, nor, you know, I have in the past.
Okay.
I've been known to clip a few things to board.
Right. So, I mean, as a kid, I loved using clipboards. I had two that I acquired them in the house somewhere or I bought them. I don't remember how that was, you know, and I would always use them, you know, whenever I was writing out of my ideas of things. And, you know, I as a kid, I would always write out stories and things like that. So I would always walk around with a clipboard. And I actually, about a year or two, came across them. And I use them now. And it's really funny here. I'm going to actually show you that I have a clipboard next to me as I'm doing this. So Travis got to see it. Not everyone else does. Sorry.
I have a clipboard next to me as well.
Ooh.
I mean, it's there buried under some comics and stuff, and it's covered in stickers, but yeah.
Right. So sometimes I use it both as a mouse pad, but yeah. I also use it when I'm taking notes and I'm not necessarily at a desk or something like that, you know, when I'm, you know, taking notes for my show. And
that's probably exactly what I've used this one for, is if I'm downstairs watching a movie in front of the television, I will clip my little moleskin notebook, you know, clip one side of it under the clip and then, yeah, take my notes on my lap. But for the most part now, when I'm watching movies for podcasts and taking notes, I just do it at my desk.
Right. Okay. So do I. But I just found it really funny that the clipboards they have here look like the one I just showed you.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that, you know, my kids make fun of the fact that I have this clipboard. But then they use it every so often. And sometimes I'm looking for my clipboards just because one of my kids took it because they wanted to use it for something, you know.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, because they learned from me that you can sit on the couch and write something and, you know, it's not a big deal. You know, you can use that. And, I mean, whenever I fly, which is not very often, but I take that with me also because then I can actually, you know, write more easily while I'm on the plane because I don't like those tray tables. They're first of all, they're not very sturdy, but on the other hand, you know, they have grooves and they usually have a place to put a drink. So when you're writing on that, it's not so comfortable. So what do you know about the history of clipboards?
Absolutely nothing.
Sorry,
I did not prepare very well for this minute.
No, Travis, as you know, when you come on my show, you don't have to prepare because I've already prepared. I've already prepared to give people a history lesson on clipboards.
You know? Why don't you tell me about clipboards?
Oh, well, that's a great idea. Why don't I do that? So a clipboard is a thin, rigid board with a clip on top for holding paper in place. Okay. It's usually used to support paper with one hand while being able to write with the other. Okay. Especially when you don't have normal writing surfaces to use, right? So how and what year do you think the idea of a clipboard was invented?
I'm going to say 1910.
Okay, 1870.
Probably older, yeah.
1870, right. It was, you know, it can be constructed from numerous types of material. And this is just a partial list. Sometimes it's made from hardboard, aluminum, PVC, polypropylene, high impact polystyrene, and Fomex. Okay, so there are two different types of designs. You have either the single or the folding. So a single clipboard has usually a single piece of rigid material and some sort of fixing mechanism along the top. And a folding clipboard has the additional benefit of having extra space available because it allows room to put pen holders and pockets in order to have like storage and stuff like that. Okay. There are numerous kinds which open up. You know, they have like I guess you can say they have compartments underneath that you can put paperwork inside of them, or you could also keep their, you know, different type of writing implements and things like that. I found a picture on Wikipedia, which is the type of thing that you see a lot of times in movies where someone will have a clipboard and they open it up and they have stuff on the inside, that type of stuff. It's used quite often for market research and for surveys. So a lot of times you'll be at the shopping mall and someone will come up to you and start asking you questions. And, you know, clipboard is the most commonly used thing for that because it makes it easier for them to be able to write what they want more or less in midair. Okay. Can you think of any other place where clipboards are very prevalent?
I mean, I know I've, we've got them at
Are
work.
you a
We've
sports guy?
what's that?
Are you a sports guy?
Oh, not really, but yeah, I know what your, coaches will use them or whatever.
Exactly. So a lot of times in many sports, the coaches would use them, but it's very prevalent in the NFL and for football that many times you'll have like the quarterback on the sidelines carrying some sort of clipboard. So football analysts often use the notion of carrying a clipboard as an object of derision, indicating that the said football player is not good enough to play on the field and is basically, you know, just sitting on the side learning all the plays.
Okay.
That type of thing. But yeah, it's used often in sports, and obviously it's used in businesses, and it's used by podcasters worldwide, all across the world. So, and then there's two other things that are listed here on the side. So we see a pinup girl who is without a top, and then we see another picture of three women in bathing suits, just the bottom, but they're turned around, not facing us. So I decided to do a little bit of research to figure out who is the woman in this picture.
I did too.
Okay. You did too. All right. So I'll let you go first. Go ahead.
I just did a, I think I just did a Google search of nude poster Die Hard, and it pulled up a result, I think through Reddit, and it said that there were actually three Playboy Playmates in this movie. And
Yes.
one is the lady that jumps into the arms of her boyfriend when John is first arriving in the airport,
Right.
and
The irony of
then
that one, once again, I want to say the irony of that one. That was the July 1988 Playmate of the Month, Terry Lynn Doss.
okay.
Okay. Now, the irony of it is this movie came out in July 1988, meaning that when they filmed it, she wasn't a playmate yet.
Sure.
So that's
Interesting.
interesting. Yes, continue.
Yeah, the next one is the lady when they're clearing out the offices, her and a coworker, presumably a coworker, having sex, and she's just one of the people that they clear out, like I said. And I'm not sure what her name is. And then
Okay,
there's
that is
this.
the May 1982 Playmate of the Month, Kim Moline.
Yeah, then there's this one who is Pamela Stein,
Yes.
who is the playmate of November of 1987, I
Yes.
believe.
That is correct. She's the playmate. She's actually the centerfold of the November 1987 issue Playboy. The cover model was Jessica Hahn. Well, there was just a movie that came out recently that had a lot to do with her.
Oh, yeah.
She is I believe she, yeah, she was the woman who had an affair with Jim Baker.
Okay.
So the movie The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
Sure.
that you know came out that Jessica Chastain won an Oscar for her role in that movie.
Okay.
So yeah, so that was Jessica Hahn was the cover model. The centerfold was Pam Stein. There was an interview with Daniel Ortega. Okay, the 20 questions was given to Kelly McGillis. And yeah, that's from that issue.
There you go.
Yeah, and so I looked it up on eBay. If you wanted to buy that issue, you can actually find it now for $1.95,
Oh, nice.
which basically means that I don't think its worth went up. If anything, I think it went down.
Yeah. Despite its appearance in Die Hard.
That's true. That's true. Well, because you don't have to buy the
Yeah,
Playboy in
there
order to
you
see the
go.
picture.
You just have to go frame by frame.
There you go. You just have to quickly just freeze frame, and there you go. You got it.
Yeah.
What's very interesting is I mean, I wonder how much it cost at the time.
Don't
On
know.
the no, I can't really see. It cost $350, if I remember, if I can read that properly.
Oh, okay.
Okay, which
I
means
thought
that
you
yes,
meant like
the
to
price
put
has
this in
gone
a
down.
movie,
No, no, no,
but
no, 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 no. I meant how much the issue cost.
sure.
So yeah, that it has decreased in value.
I wonder, does the movie have to credit Playboy in this in the very end when they show, thanks to whatever? I wonder if they
I don't
have
know.
to
That's a
acknowledge
great
this
question.
or.
I don't know that answer. I didn't look into that. It wasn't something that I thought of checking.
Yeah. I'd be curious. I mean, because it is someone's copywritten work, I would think that they would have to either get it cleared or acknowledge it at some point. The photo of the three ladies, I imagine that's like a, I was trying to see if that was like a Budweiser thing, because they did so much advertising in the 80s with, women in swimsuits and things like that, and it would just say Budweiser on it, but this doesn't seem to, I don't
I
see
mean,
a
that looks
logo
like
or
something that would come out of like a Sports
calendar.
Illustrated,
Sure.
swimsuit issue or something like that. That's what it
Yeah.
looks like.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's really interesting. It's an interesting question. I mean, IMDb doesn't mention any of these type of things. There are like seven people that get special thanks, but
Yeah.
I don't know if any of them are related to, Playboy, and
Right.
that's why they would actually get permission. Don't know.
Curious. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to, I'll have to keep that in mind when we get to the credits and when we're going through them to see if there's anything
Yeah.
that says thanks to Playboy, and then we'll say, oh, okay, now I understand why.
Maybe find out by the, because this is it's kind of setting it up as a bit of a landmark here, because we're going to
Yes.
be back in this location, I don't know, 20 minutes from now maybe, and then it's kind of a, he even sees it. It's like, okay, I know where I'm at. So it's kind of being used as a something just to kind of make it familiar, so that later on we know he's been here before. So.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I just tried to do a quick search for do movies have to get permission to use Centerfold, and I got all these
Yeah.
different articles, but nothing completely related at
Sure.
all to what yeah, I don't know how that really works. I'll have to like I said, I'll keep that in mind for later.
Sure.
It's a good point to bring up here. Right, and then he goes all the way down to the end of the corridor and looks down, again to
Yeah.
show us how far down, where he is. And then he quickly goes around and gets on this ladder and starts climbing down the ladder. So again, it's just used to show us geographical locations here. As you said, they're trying to point out locations for us for later, so that we're
Yeah.
familiar as well as he's familiar, that type of thing.
It'd be fun if there was like an infographic with a picture of Nakatomi, the building, and like You know how you see a Lord of the Rings map and it'll show everyone's journey from start to finish? It'd be cool if there was a view of the building with, you know, John's travel, like, everywhere. Because, you know,
I've seen views of the building that tell you what's on every floor and what happens on every floor, but not like footprints or dashes, you know, like a Harry Potter type of thing, you know, where you have the footprints moving, you know, from the invisible people, you know, things like that.
It'd be fun, just one of those. So many artists will reinterpret or make their own, you know, movie posters. And sometimes it's a very simple thing with, like, I've seen them with the Nakatomi building with an explosion at the top. And that's just there because, you know, it's a semi-recognizable building and you know what happens, you know.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. So that'd be cool, kind of a cool way to visually represent the movie.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. And then the shot completely changes and we hear screaming and someone says, "I want blood." And we see that it's Carl, and Carl starts, you know, turning over the desk and causing a lot of destruction in, I guess, Holly's office. You know, sorry to Holly that she's going to have to clean it up later. Hmm. You know, but, you know, he really gets violent there. You know, someone recently told me that there are places you can go, like, pay money to go places to break things. You know, they have like this new thing where you can go somewhere and pay money to just destroy things for like an hour or whatever it is, you know. So Carl needs that. Carl needs to lower his stress level.
For sure.
And Hans, I love the fact that Hans is able to basically pin Carl to the wall.
Sure.
You know, Hans is not a very physical person. He's also not very physically imposing, you know, but he's still able to take Carl and throw him up against the wall and say, "You'll have it."
But and then gets out this long, big mouthful.
Yes, a big mouthful, but it tells us a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. He says, "But let Heinrich plant the detonators and Theo prepare the vault. After we call the police, they'll waste hours trying to negotiate. And then you can tear the building apart looking for this man. But until then, we do not alter the plan." So, again, it's great here because Hans is telling both Carl and us his whole plan. Even though I'm assuming most people, when they're first watching this movie, will not catch specifically what he's saying here. But this is his whole plan. You know, let's plant the detonators so we can blow up the top of the building. Theo has to get the vault to the point where we're waiting for the seventh lock, because what would happen if the police turn off, you know, the electricity before they get the sixth lock open? You know, will they get screwed? Will that stop their thing? And then he talks about the fact that they're going to waste hours trying to negotiate.
Yeah.
And it'll give you time to do all these things. And Carl has a great response. And if he alters it, which he already has.
Yeah.
We know he already has. But he just does it really, really well, the whole thing. And it's nice to see that Carl can question Hans and Hans's instincts. You know, and if you pay attention, Hans has a great reaction to that. His facial expression is you know what? You might be right.
Yeah, just the facial acting that Alan Rickman is doing here is really nice. Just the arched eyebrows and kind of the, you might be onto something.
Yeah.
We'll see kind of vibe. Just, yeah.
I actually think now that I'm looking at it, that Carl turns over Jeannie's desk.
Okay.
Not the secretary, not Holly's desk. Because I think later in the week we will actually see Holly's desk.
Okay.
So therefore, I think maybe on Friday we see her desk. So
we know
later on that Hans does sit at the desk when Holly comes into the office. So So it must be that this is Ginny's desk. So conveniently, you know, they had two desks in the room. You know, that worked out well for them. And then as the two of them are arguing, we get a shot from the outside looking into in through the window, and we get once again Holly's viewpoint, where she's is looking in, and you know she once again, I mean, first of all, we see Franco next to you know holding his gun on all the hostages, so it's a great shot. That on the left-hand side, you see Franco on the inside of the room holding his gun on them. But then on the right-hand side, you see both Hans and Carl talking in Holly's office, you know, the shot. And it's very symmetrical because you have the blinds right in the middle that cut the scene in two.
Mm.
You know, the shot, you see the right-hand side and the left-hand side of everything. So that's really cool the way that they do that.
I like the way the blinds have naturally have flipped direction where Carl has been thrown against the window here just to.
Yeah, but when he walks away, they don't go back. You'd think that they would have gone back properly.
No. No, I think once you if you flip them one direction, they don't reset themselves.
No, but it depends if they were completely flipped or if they were just you know pushed temporarily.
Oh, sure.
You know that's what I was thinking.
I think there's been enough impact, you know, that they were definitely flipped for good.
Yeah. And then Ellis begins to speak to Holly, and he goes, "What do you think?" And you see on Holly's face that she does have a clue as to what's going on. She's not too surprised here with what's going on. And that's the way that this minute ends. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
This minute, I really noticed the score by Michael Kamen, who I'm a big fan of. He did the music for, I believe, the first Mission Impossible, and I know him most from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and the Iron Giant score, and the first X-Men movie. This like with John sneaking around up here, it's very very similar to. Some of the music in Iron Giant where the kid is sneaking around in the woods looking for this monster. So it's just very reminiscent for me. It's very recognizable as Michael Kamen music.
Yeah. So. No, I've always loved Michael Kamen's music. He did the score for Mr. Holland's Opus.
Okay.
Which is, I can listen to that music over and over because it's just great. Okay. And he also did From the Earth to the Moon.
Oh, okay.
He did Band of Brothers also. Yeah. Those are all, you know, scores that I can listen to over and over. Unfortunately, he is no longer with us.
No. Yeah. He passed away right after, I think right in 2000, maybe, because I remember he did the X-Men score and not too long after, I think he.
Well, Band of Brothers was 2001. So.
Was it? Okay. So early. So
it,
yeah.
No, it's possible that he got it done beforehand. I mean, it's not impossible.
Yeah. I know just, one of my other like favorite things he did was the first, like it was called S&M. It was Symphony and Metallica. It was Metallica music put to a score the band played along with Michael Kamen and his orchestra. So this is really cool. Yeah. It's really cool.
That's really interesting. Right. So he died in 2003 at the age of 55. Relatively young.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he had 68 movie credits. Well, actually, some of them don't count because he has, you know, two Die Hard credits after he died. Okay. So I guess it's based on the stuff that he did, you know.
Sure.
But he did also Frequency, which I love that score also, with Dennis Quaid. It's a time travel movie. Mm-hmm. Lethal Weapon 4.
Hmm. Okay.
He's got some. He did the Three Musketeers, the one with Kiefer Sutherland and Charlie Sheen, and I mean that's also a great thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I always liked that movie as a kid.
Me too. Even as an adult, I like that one. You know, it starts off.
I've only watched it once as an adult, I think, and still enjoyed it, you know. But
yeah, I still don't understand why the song from that movie wasn't nominated for anything anywhere. You know, when you have Sting, Bryan Adams, and Rod Stewart,
yeah,
doing a song together, like what did they do wrong? Like, what,
right.
maybe the song wasn't considered original. Maybe that's what it was. I don't know.
Well, what did it go up against that year? What, I don't know what year that was, but
that, it was 1993. But again, that's not.
What year was The Bodyguard?
No, The Bodyguard was the year before. The Bodyguard was 1992.
Huh. Okay. I don't know.
So I'm trying to think. I mean, that 93 was the year that Schindler's List came out, but there wasn't yeah. really a love song in Schindler's List.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I can understand why it would win score, you know, even though Michael Kamen's score is great, but it's not John Williams and Schindler's List. But I don't remember what I'm at now. I'm actually curious what movie won, best song.
Original song. Yeah.
Okay. That was the year of Aladdin. Okay. That makes a lot of
sense.
So A Whole New World won the Oscar. Yeah. Understandably. But again, it's still an honor to be nominated. You know? Right. All right. You have anything else you want to say about this movie before we get into the script?
No, I'm good.
All right. So, again.
Oh, one last thing. Yeah.
Sure. Just,
I love the way that there's a wedge driven between Carl and Hans here, you know, because of John's actions. So I like that that's a bit of a through line through the that will build throughout the movie, but no, that's it.
Right, but I think it's also partially the idea here that Hans knows the full plan. You know, he's looking at things from an intellectual perspective.
Right.
And obviously Carl is dealing with things from an emotional perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it comes down to. Hans is basically saying, okay, don't screw things up right now.
Yeah.
You're going to have time later. This guy's he's not going anywhere. I promise you that you're going to get to him. But, you know, continue doing what I'm telling you to do because I don't want to mess everything else up.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it comes down to.
A little bit of a similar thing happens in Die Hard with a Vengeance between Simon Gruber and his kind of right hand man, I think Targo, or something like that. So
Targo, who was in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
Oh, was he?
Yes, he was the lawyer who Neil needed to buy. He paid him for his taxi at the very beginning. It was in the second week.
Okay.
The first, it was at the end of the first week.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, yeah. Where he says, "You're a thief," and he goes, "Close. I'm a lawyer." So there are a few discrepancies here in the script. First of all, when McLean gets off the elevator, he's in pitch darkness, and it says McLean takes out a coin, a quarter. He stops, switches to a nickel, throws it into the void. It is a full 4 seconds until we hear it ching and bounce on concrete far below. You don't have to be a mathematics whiz to know it's a long drop. And then McLean goes, "Jesus." So then he like walks around cautiously in order to make sure not to fall down. Whatever, not needed, but it's a fun thing to read, you know, that they thought of that idea.
Yeah.
And then the conversation between Hans and Carl is slightly different. Hans says, "I know what you're feeling, but this is not productive." And then Carl says, "He was my only brother, my only family. I want blood for my blood. We search now."
I'm glad they cut most of that.
Yeah, exactly. And instead of Ellis saying at the end, "What do you think?" he says, "What's happening?" You know, Rerun and JJ. Is that their names from What's Happening? What's happening?
I'm sure.
What's happening? Well, you never saw that show?
No, that one was in reruns way before. Yeah.
Okay, I remember when that had its first run in the 80s. So I remember seeing that as a kid. All right, so every Wednesday we have a segment called Hans Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five roles of Alan Rickman. So what's your list, Travis?
My list would be in number five would be Dogma. Four is Galaxy Quest. Three would be Die Hard. Although I could probably switch Galaxy Quest and Die Hard. In fact, I think I will. Number two would be Quigley Down Under. And then number one is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Okay, why is Robin Hood Prince of Thieves your top choice here?
That's one
No,
of my.
I'm not questioning your choice.
Sure,
I'm
sure.
wondering what is, what's your rationale behind it?
It's just that's a movie I grew up with, and just it's probably the first thing I saw him in. Even though several of these came out, before that, like Quigley, I don't know, Quigley came out right around the same time,
Quigley came out a
and
year later. Quigley, I think,
right,
Quigley came out, wait, Quigley came out either in 90 or 92. And Robin
okay,
Hood came out in 91. I
yeah,
think, I have a feeling that Quigley came out in 92, but I could be
maybe.
wrong. I will. Quigley, no, Quigley, I was right. Quigley came out in 90. So there you go.
Okay.
I was initially right. So Quigley came out the year before, yes.
So yeah, just it's a movie I grew up with, and I just loved his wickedness, just how evil he is in that movie and over the top, I just really love that movie, and his performance in it is just unbeatable.
Okay, that is definitely a fair reason for that. All right, and do you want to tell people once again where they can find Travis Bow?
Sure. You can find me on let's plug Marvel Events Timeline. That's my comic book, my Marvel specific comic book podcast where we go through the history of Marvel comics. That comes out about once a month generally. It's kind of a side project for both myself and my co-host. So it's not it doesn't come out as often as
Brian
most
Lockhart.
podcasts do. What's that?
Brian Lockhart.
Yeah, Brian. So yeah, check that out if you're interested in the history of Marvel Comics, and that's pretty easy to find. Marvel Events Timeline everywhere.
Yeah, well, I'm a listener and I enjoy that show a
Oh,
lot.
right on.
So yeah. I just wish there were
Yeah.
more and that they were
Yeah, I
shorter.
know.
And that they were shorter. There'd be shorter episodes, sitting and listening to 2 hours. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Wait, I don't think any of yours went 2 hours, but some of them go.
We probably had some that are close.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. But it's fun listening to. But sometimes
Right
you want
on.
things broken up a little bit.
Yeah. Well,
It's that's fine. At
hopefully,
least
as we go,
they're there.
we'll get into more of a format and make things a little more streamlined and,
Okay,
but
that is
yeah.
definitely fair. Okay, and finding me is quite simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, and you can go to my website, movierobminute.com. So, Travis, you feel like coming back again tomorrow?
Absolutely.
All right, excellent. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.